Welcome to the Patriot League's Pillar Citizen Spotlight. My name is Aaron Robertson, and I'm the president of the Patriot League. We're a nonpartisan public advocacy organization that seeks the common good of society through the advancement of America's founding principles, working together to advance the principles of traditional marriage, parental rights, religious liberty, and the humanity of the unborn. Four pillars of moral truth that we believe sustain America's ability to survive and thrive. And we're joined today by Father Andrew Kemperling. And Father Andrew, we're so pleased to have you as our spotlight guest today, and just looking forward to chatting with you about the pillar principles.
Thank you. It's my honor and pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. Father Andrew serves as the pastor at St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Parish in Denver, Colorado, and we've come to know him as a leader in his community that believes strongly in the pillar principles. So we've invited Father Andrew here today to give us his perspective as a religious leader on the pillar principles. And Father Andrew's remarks are not intended to be an official statement of St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Parish or its affiliates, but reflect his sincerely held personal and religious beliefs. So with that, Father Andrew, we'd like to start off with sort of what's your primary motivation for believing in and defending the pillar principles?
Well, I know that we live in what is often called a post-Christian society. Okay, because the Christian principles that were just given as a way that people made assumptions about life, they don't exist anymore. Mm. All these traditions, all these conventions that would happen within families, workplaces, neighborhoods, they don't happen like it used to.
Right.
In fact, a lot of people don't even have the same working assumptions that we did in the past. And so one of my real concerns is I've done a lot of studying about politics and religion, and I'm watching our Christian values slip away. And we need to find a way to get our Christian culture back. And so that's part of the reason why I'm very involved with the Pillars Project and with other things like this, because it's an important thing for us to help people have the language to be able to re-engineer Christian culture.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do understand that you're a member of the Catholic community, obviously as a Catholic priest.
Yes.
And so that being said, why, in your view, should the Catholic community not only believe in, sort of from this private view, okay, I believe in these principles, but also actually advocate for them as well?
Right. One of the key principles that we in the Catholic Church believe is things should happen at the most local level. That's why we're all arranged as local parishes. Everybody thinks of the Catholic Church as this big monolith with the Pope, like, phoning in instructions. That's so far from the truth. You know, everything is done at the most local level. And what I see in society, just as a bigger trend, is everything is trying to be done by the government for us. That is not what our faith tells us to do. The more they do that, the more we're disconnected from our values. And part of the whole process of why I'm a priest is for the salvation of souls, so that people can experience their salvation in Jesus Christ, in a family, in their mother and father, in being a mother and a father, children, the whole nuclear family. Those, so many of those attributes are being attacked by society that I know as a priest, I have to do what I can to help those people. Wow. Because that's my job. I'm a leader. Wow. And so let's lead them to solve the problems they're facing in our world today.
Wow. Wow. And we appreciate leaders, spiritual leaders, who have that conviction too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. So do you believe holding public office can be a spiritual calling for some individuals, or do you believe that's sort of a secular role?
No, I believe you live your faith. I mean, I just don't get this idea when somebody says, well, I worship God on Sundays. That's when I do my religion. That is a total cop out, and I don't think any religion would accept that. I don't care if you're a Muslim, a Jew, any Christian, Catholic, or Protestant. Nobody believes that. That's a lukewarm religious person, where they can separate their public action away from what they do privately between the walls of a church on Sunday. I mean, that's actually a page right out of socialism. Socialism gives you the freedom of worship. Whatever you can do on Sunday behind your walls, fine, but then don't bring it out into the culture.
Sort of a nod and a wink to religion, but yeah. Not too serious.
That's just that is just a calling card of socialism when you say something like that. That's not authentic religion. Authentic religion is you weave your public life and your private life together. Right. And so to answer your question about politicians, by all means, okay. I would like a politician who I can trust will have personal views that will then carry with him or her into
right.
the legislative process.
Because what good is it to hold a private view if you're never going to apply it in your daily life?
That's why we have an election.
Right.
So we know who we're voting for.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There are some Catholics who say that members of your religious community shouldn't concern themselves with advocating for the pillar principles.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasoning is because, hey, this is a distraction to more important spiritual work.
Yes.
So how would you respond to that, Sam?
Well, I know that when people talk about, you know, that we shouldn't be messing around with politics, let's just stick with the religious stuff. Well, a lot of that attitude comes from a larger idea called the separation of church and state.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Now, that idea, a separation of church and state, sounds very clever. And a lot of people think, wow, that was a really smart idea to put in the Constitution. Well, actually, it's not in the Constitution. People go, what? Yes. No, it's an interpretation of the Constitution that came in the 1960s, mm-hmm. and it is a concept that's been floating around for a long time, and actually something that you actually see in biblical principles, mm-hmm. but the founders had nothing like that in mind. And for us, we would say, no, it is very appropriate for us to be involved in these things, mm-hmm. because we want to make sure that as we're living, we affect society. Mm. People who are not very religious, they don't understand the true consequence of religion. I mean, we're supposed to be a light on a hill, Christ tells us.
Right.
Well, you don't put your light under a bushel basket, you put it on top of a hill so that all can see the good in what you do.
That's right.
And give glory to God.
Put that lamp on the table. You
know, that's right, so others can see it.
Yes.
Well, what good is that if you don't impact the common good? And so when people say that, frankly, it's ignorant on their part. They're not very well educated.
Sure. Know, yeah.
And they're probably not very religious because religion hasn't taken, they've been kind of taken over with the secular idea that I have the secular world that I live in, mm-hmm. and then I have my private personal religious beliefs. I'm sorry, but that's not authentic Christianity.
Wow.
And it's not authentic religion. Because most religions don't accept that either.
Right.
They want you to, it should show through the way you live your life.
Exactly. And so you would say that, and you kind of addressed my next question, so I'll just sort of go light on that.
Yeah.
You would say even as, not just a parishioner, a member of the Catholic community, but even as a leader, this is very appropriate to speak in your role, not obviously necessarily for a political candidate per se, but for these moral issues.
Right.
This is not just relegated to sort of the rank and file of the Catholic community,
right.
even the leadership.
One of the things that I could add to what you just said,
please.
Is that, and this is kind of going bigger, but you know me, I like to think a little
bigger. Yeah,
I like to think a little, I like to have that 30,000 foot view. You have to remember, if you're talking about religion, you're talking theology. Mm-hmm. Okay? Well, theology actually comes from the world of philosophy. So I can talk my values at a philosophic level, and nobody would know that I'm talking religion because I just switched into the philosophic realm.
Okay.
Well, all the debate that happens in a legislature, it just depends on which philosophic base you're working out of. And that's where it begs the question, oh, you can't legislate morality. Well, that's baloney. That's a contradiction in itself because every laws are morality,
excellent.
Are generated from an ethic.
Mm.
Well, everybody has an ethic, spoken or unspoken. They may not even know they're working out of one,
yeah.
and it might be a hybrid type. Well, my job, because I look at philosophic systems, is that I can analyze what is your ethic. How blended are you from different ethics to be able to what you're doing? But I'm hearing value systems that go contrary to Christianity.
Yes.
And that's where I would invite people when they're speaking, and when I hear people talk, I can say, wait a minute, if you can make that assumption, then I work it back. It's like playing a game. I can go back and say, you would have to ask this question, which then assumes these values. Well, then you're not talking Christian.
Right.
So I know when you have a Christian value, fine. Maybe I'm working with somebody who's not Christian. Well, there's some common ground in humanity that we can work upon.
Because you're both bringing your philosophy.
That's right. And that's part of what I like about the Pillars Project. So what happens if I am working with somebody who's non-Christian? We can find common ground for the common good because we believe in goodness. Okay?
Right.
But then what I find it's easier to work with somebody who's a religious person. When you get a secularist who does not believe in God, their value system has negated religion out of their thinking, and by doing it, they negated certain moral systems and philosophic values. That's a problem.
Right. And it's sort of like selective censorship to me. As you were talking, it made me think about, you were saying how, you know, as a Christian community, then that is going to be presented as their philosophy or their worldview, whatever word you like.
That's right.
So then if folks in the secular environment could say, hey, that's bringing religion in the realm, it's sort of selective. We're saying, well, we can bring our philosophy in, but you can't bring yours.
That's right.
And that's a censorship of one point of view.
That's right. And it's a biased way, and it's not a fair argument. That's a way of trying to manipulate people and to control them and not have an honest discussion with somebody. That's a way to not really engage into dialogue, but to force your ideas on another person. And that is a world we're living in right now.
Isn't it true?
I mean, people are being forced into a way of thinking instead of this idea of dialogue, critical thinking.
Right.
That is not what's happening. People are saying, I don't want to hear your side because I am so sure that I'm thinking my way is the right way. Well, part of the issue that I would have as a person that's been trained to think with good value system is that we can find some common ground. Well, some of the common ground at the highest level, I'm sorry, some of these seculars have negated these.
Right, it's hard to find it.
For instance, truth. Well, it's sort of, you know, Jesus, when he was with Pontius Pilate in John's Gospel has him talking about truth. What's truth?
Right.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's the question of our times. What is truth?
Isn't that?
Well, I can say right now, there is no absolute for these socialists. Because reality is based upon whatever is good for them. Well, then you have nothing solid to hang anything on.
Right.
Well, then when you're going to have a conversation with somebody, there's no need to listen to another person if you dislike them,
or
because there's nothing to go to.
Right.
Whereas my hope would be with a religious person, they believe in absolute truth, just that we're confused by what we might think that is.
Sure.
But at least we keep going higher and higher to God is a creator and there's fixed things
some
in the world.
Some commonality there.
That's the problem with a diehard secularist.
Right.
They don't believe in the truth.
Right.
And they don't believe in what is good. Then what does it mean to be good? Well, good is whatever benefits me. No, good is what benefits society and others.
Yeah. Well, and it's the hypocrisy of, it's the historical fact that when religious groups, and I'm speaking specifically about the Christian community historically, when they have been, and there's been exceptions throughout history, don't get me wrong, but Christians generally have the worldview of tolerance for other people's worldviews and sort of, I hate to use the term live and let live, but to some degree, it's respecting the fact that you may not share my theology, but you still have the right to exercise whatever.
Right.
Unfortunately, we've seen in history a lot of atheistic nations and groups, mass murder on unbelievable scale.
Yes.
So, you know, like to your point, the religious community, we actually believe in tolerance and allowing for, in the traditional Christian view, does in fact believe in tolerance.
Well, you know, I would then say because you believe in tolerance, then you know there's an absolute truth that will hold it all together.
Right.
But you see, if you have somebody who doesn't believe in absolute truth, facts don't matter. So then you need propaganda.
There you go.
Propaganda. You create an artificial fantasy world of what you'd like
there
it
you
to
go.
Be
Thank you.
Because there's no truth. See, with people that all have an understanding of what truth is, we can at least say, okay, we can live and let live because everybody will then have the same assumption of what is good for everybody with some variations.
Sure, yeah.
And we will know that we all live and die and we all are going to be answerable to our maker someday. That's the advantage of having a God-based belief system across the board. My biggest issue with secularism is they take God and God's values out of the equation.
Right.
and it makes absolute truth hard to attain. Wow. Well, then there's nothing to hang your hat on. Yeah. These people don't want to hear if they disagree with it. Propaganda is what they're spinning. Well, propaganda is fake.
Yeah.
It's dishonest. So when people come and say, oh, you can't talk like that because you might offend, right. It's that in itself is a dishonest argument because Absolutely. It's not honest about the facts that we are entering into. They're trying to manipulate the end result without being fair or just.
Right. Yeah.
So here you're hearing these words, fair, just, honesty, you know, fake, untrue, lying, dishonest. These are all Christian values. Well, if you're not a Christian, you can lie, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, right.
Because it's whatever's good for you.
Right.
That's a dangerous world because you know what? Dangerous. Worlds that have that, they descend and fall apart. They don't last because the God, the creator of the universe with human systems, justice is real. You'll get your own justice really quick because that system will fall apart. It won't last.
That's good. So true. So true. So, in your view, how do the pillar principles positively impact society as a whole? Not just for one, not just for the Catholic community, not just for whatever community it is. How would you say?
I know I've said it once before. It's culture.
Okay.
Culture is what those pillar principles affect. Because here you're talking about parental rights and traditional marriage. The way I understand the truth and how it's organized, the core unit of humanity, if you're going to talk about politics and society, you don't start with the president. You start at the very bottom. You start with a husband and a wife and a family unit. That's the core. That's what we call a nuclear family in sociology. But for classic Christian ideas, we know that's the core unit of God's design for all of the world. Mm. You have to remember Adam and Eve, they were married. Okay, so here's this married couple with children. And from that, this idea of traditional marriage is the man and a woman. That is the hinge that creates culture. And God gave the mother and father rights, not privileges, rights. Mm. Rights are given to us by God. And with those rights, they then create the family story. They create the family customs. They create all those. And then they percolate and ripple out as other families join with them. And there's every variation because of ethnicity and, you know, religious practice or whatever it might, regional, if you're, you know, in a sunny place, a cold place, whatever. Yeah. But there's values attached to each of those practices. And see, that's what morality is, because morality is behaviors, and then you govern them, and then then you have to get that organized. So then they start becoming policies, and then they become rules, policy. And pretty soon policies turn into politics, and pretty soon the bubble gets bigger. But where did it start? The family.
So good.
What's the pillar project? Parental rights and traditional marriage. Like, and then you go with the sanctity of the unborn. Yeah. Well, you have to have your religion to do it.
Right.
There's the pillars.
Right.
So it's a natural for me to want to be with this. And that's why I've encouraged other Catholic priests who understand this on this unified approach to what our mission is in the Catholic Church. Most are happy once they understand that reality to sign the Pillars letters and be part of the Pillars project.
Right. Yeah. No, we appreciate that. So it's such a beautiful picture you just painted. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that a person's gender is viewed, at least by most within the Catholic community, as a gift and a design of one's creator.
Yes.
And so if this is in fact the case, how should your community interact with those individuals who struggle to recognize their gender as such, or who may be dealing with other similar issues?
That's right. We believe in our belief system that each person has their dignity. Every person. Now, what a lot of people make the mistake to do is they confuse behaviors with a person's being. Mm. Who you are as a person is different than your behavior. So as a person, you have your dignity, created the image and likeness of God. And so every person, clear of their gender or confused with their gender, has their dignity. And what we would say is that when, because of the world not being perfect, because of the imperfections of the world that we have that have been passed on to others, some people are born a certain way that have that confused. Fine. But they are called to live a moral, good life as anybody would. Because everybody has the mix of their own struggles and gifts.
Because we all have deformed desires or disordered things, right?
So it's real confusing idea that has entered in our world today is the word equality. Mm-hmm. Equality is not what you think it is. Equality is a very important idea, but we cannot make it more important than other ideas. Society has flipped them around. Well, there's a problem with that, because it has a real problem with marriage and with gender and with identity. The very fact that God wanted a male and a female to come together, he made them look different.
Yeah.
Okay. And not only do they look different, emotionally, on the inside, we're very different from each other.
It's biological.
Yeah.
You know,
it's emotional, intellectual, and spiritual.
Yeah.
Men and women are different. And so the difference has an important part to play in equality. Mm. And so equality is a good value, but there are other values that are actually higher than equality.
Mm.
So equality has aspects of being fair to equal opportunity, but it gets, you have to understand differences and different gifts.
Right.
And each of us not being equal in the amount of gifts they received, equal in the amount of intelligence, equal in looks, equal in talent,
right,
equal all kinds of things. You're not equal. We're all different.
It's this idea that takes equality and misconstrues it as sameness. We should all advocate, like you're saying, for justice and equality in that
That's
sense.
Right.
But we've confused equality with sameness. We're not the same.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
And then the way I look at it, because you know I have like this organizational system of thinking, they have it out of the order. It's now a disordered understanding of its importance. Equality should be in its proper place.
Yes.
Then other values have its place. Then when you understand the differences, equality plays a part.
Absolutely. Right.
Okay. But if you get it out of order, well, then you even attack truth itself, because I believe truth is hierarchical. There's some truths higher than others. Well, then you'd say, no, all truth is truth. All sin is sin. I'm sorry, but that's not true.
Right.
That's not true. So when that happens, get back to your question, a gender-confused person gets into a world that says, no, this is an equal rights issue. Equality. So here we got this equal rights issue, and I'm being discriminated against, and people hate me. No, you've now made the mistake of combining who you are with what you do, and you've made all values equal. Again, another mistake.
Right. And I remember talking with you one time, you were talking so good about identity. Those who struggle with the same gender attraction, you know, we don't have to identify with the things that say that are disordered. So I have disordered desires, you have them. Every person has that, those parts in their soul. And we don't go around and label, if I was a thief, well, I identify as a thief, right?
That's right.
We can recognize it when something in our heart or soul is disordered.
That's
and
right.
then, as you say, go to God to give us the strength to respond to it the way
That's
we
right.
need to. But we don't, I remember you talking about that years ago, the identity. We don't sit there and label ourselves or label other people.
You don't identify yourself with your behavior. You identify yourself as a child of God.
Yeah.
I have my being separate from my behavior.
Right.
The problem with people that have been sold this idea that this is how you're going to get equality is to then claim yourself by your behavior, if you're homosexual or gender confused, wherever it might be.
Right.
That's a dangerous thing to do, because we have had movements in society, they're happening as we speak, where people can select your behavior as being unacceptable. Well, then they just eliminate you.
Yeah.
Well, that denies your dignity. Well, that's the problem with getting your identity from your behavior. Your identity has nothing to do with your behavior. Mm. You are a human being with all rights and privileges.
Wow.
Where do you get that from? You're created in the reflection of God Almighty. And so when you recognize somebody's dignity, you're actually paying due honor and respect to God himself.
So grateful for that message. What a beautiful message compared to outside these doors, so to speak, in the world and culture we live, where human life is so viewed as so cheap.
It's cheap.
And you're saying, hey,
it's so holy.
This is not what God teaches. As a part of the Catholic community, speaking for that, saying this is not.
Well, and let's just go to the end of a continuum. Let's look at a prisoner. Okay. Officially bad behavior.
Okay.
Judged by others to be bad. Well, if you take that to its full extreme, well, you should just execute them all.
Sure.
Why do we take care of them? Because our understanding is each person has
right.
dignity. Even though they're doing what is just for their behavior, we still treat them with respect and dignity. You can't yeah. torture them. You have to feed them, house them, clothe them, give them opportunity of education,
right.
socialization, whatever it might be.
You have
to keep them
society.
Safe
yeah.
and then allow them to come back into
yeah.
society. That's what. But if you take this idea that you get your identity from your behavior alone, this changes society's approach pretty quick.
Yes.
You could just eliminate. Then you can eliminate prisoners. Well, you can pretty much eliminate the mentally ill. Well, pretty soon you can start identifying certain classes
well,
of people.
Of
well, then you're back to Nazi Germany because they identified
yeah,
the
right.
Jewish people as somebody who should be eliminated.
That's right.
And they did kill prisoners. Mm. And by the way, they did kill the mentally ill and the
wow.
people born with defects. Yeah, because why keep them?
Scary.
Why keep them? They're drag on society. You've made money more important or values other than human dignity.
Right. Modern society becomes more important. You're standing in the way of progress.
That's right. That's
wow.
right. So that's why it's important for us to reclaim these classic Christian ideas from the founding of our country,
so
which
good.
Is at the very heart and core of every religion. And with our certain focus upon Jesus Christ, we know that these values permeate a society with assumptions and categorical ways of seeing and understanding a world that now is openly being challenged as we now live in a post-Christian culture. This is in our face all the time now.
No doubt.
And then we end up with having these dishonest conversations with people who have no intent of being fair or just with you. They just want to win.
So true. So those individuals that we're talking about, they struggle with, you know, the recognition of their gender, again, is that God-given gift and so on.
Yeah.
If they want to attend your religious services,
yeah.
assuming that, you know, they're not there to just disrupt, but they sincerely want to hear the teaching,
yeah.
are they welcome to attend your services?
By all means. You are welcome to attend our Mass. We would ask that you respect our customs, that if you're prepared to receive the what we would consider something that people went through quite a bit of preparation to receive is Holy Communion.
Mm.
You have to be prepared and ready to receive it. There are some Catholics who exclude themselves because they don't even feel they're ready.
Right.
And they go to Mass every Sunday. Mm. But they don't want to receive because they're not worthy to receive.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you you want to be acting right with the teachings of the Church. Now, are people challenged with that? Yes. But then we have sacraments for that. That's why we have confession.
That's good to be challenged, right?
Yeah.
For you know, my where I'm supposed to be.
That's right.
I mean, that's
and people then keep using the sacraments to come closer and closer to God. So we would ask people not to participate in communion. But then I have found that people think that they're going to agree with everything I have to say. Well, this last Sunday, I gave a really hard truth. Because I know I live in Denver. I know there are a lot of people who tend to be more liberal. And I challenged something. I used two very important words. Instead of using the word sex, I used the word procreation.
Okay.
Instead of disordered sexuality, I used the word perversion.
Okay.
Boy, I'll tell you, you want to get hate. Start
okay.
telling people they're perverted.
Wow.
Well, that's the reaction. And you know what? That's our word.
Mm.
The word has fallen into disuse.
What does the word mean? And I know you're an intelligent guy. You
yeah.
kind of look at the words and the meaning.
Yeah.
Give us a capture of what does that convey?
And the way I looked up the word is it really means the reversal of to pervert something is to reverse it around,
okay.
to change it. I know that in talking about disordering truth and getting it out of order, mm-hmm. turning it around, when you are talking about sexuality, perversion is the proper word. And so every derivative that comes from that, we want children to know that word.
Mm-hmm.
Children are not yeah. being taught that word.
You're probably right on that.
They're not being, yeah. Go ahead and use the word procreation. They have no idea. You just said sex. They have no idea. That's the ordered, designed way of talking about the relationship of a husband and wife in a loving relationship to bring people into the world. Mm. We've lost the word.
And you're saying call a spade, right?
I'm just saying if you're going to only focus on the negative, then what's going to happen is you're going to have, that's where you're going to head. Okay. We've stopped using our words to describe the dream. And I have a whole dream displayed. What are the dream words? Virginity, chastity, purity, procreation. Well, where are those words? If you don't use them, we'll lose them. And for people to say not to use the criticism of what we know is disordered. So you eliminate the word perversion. Well, then different lifestyles involving sexuality are okay. No, they're not. Because now we're at a stage in our state where we want to have a sex ed bill where, to be honest with you, they're going to teach perversion in the classroom. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
Don't say it like that. Well, I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Thank you for speaking.
That is the truth. And I used a very interesting word the other day in my homily to describe what perversion really looks like. And it comes from a memory. Well, as you know, you mentioned it, I have a good memory.
Yeah.
Well, it's more than just a good memory. I was given an exceptional memory. I have childhood memories. I actually have baby memories.
Really?
Yeah. So I shared this with everybody. I have a baby memory of being this big.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm 1 year old.
Can't remember what I did last week, so go ahead. Yeah.
I'm just telling you, I'm being bathed in a hand sink.
Is that right?
And I remember not like overfilling it. I'm a little baby. I know I couldn't speak yet. And so this is the flash of memory I have. Bright blue Formica top with the paisley designs and that bright stainless steel ribbing with the screws in it. And I looked at the bar of soap and it looked like that big. It's a bar of Ivory soap. And to me, it looked that big.
Oh, my.
And my mother was bathing me. And the phone rang. Now, in my house, it's like 20 feet away, but around the corner in the kitchen.
Okay.
And I remember the phone rang, and my mother pointed to the soap and said, no. And as soon as she left, I grabbed the bar of soap, and I put it in my mouth.
Oh, gosh.
And it was delicious.
Oh,
it was delicious. I'm a little baby. I don't even know if I know how to eat yet, but it was delicious. Boom, out of my hands, and there it is back in its place, and my mother's going, no!
Wow.
And I'm saying, yes, good! And, I think I had a couple of words in my mind. I think I probably only had a couple of words. Yes meant good, no meant bad.
Okay.
And I was trying to say, good! I remember I couldn't say it. Good! I was trying to say good. She's saying, no! Yes! No. Then she used a word. This is the word. She pointed to it and said, poison! Oh!
Okay, boom. Activated.
Something. I knew that word. I remember my mother showing us under the sink, and she'd make sure we'd smell bleach and things like that.
Yeah, so you were familiar with
it. Yeah, and it was like stinky.
Yeah.
She'd go, bad!
Right.
Poison!
She loved you.
Poison!
Yeah.
And so we knew what poison was. And, oh!
The word triggered it for you.
That's right. Well, that's why I use the word poison with perversion. Because we've allowed perversion to poison our society.
Wow.
It has poisoned us. Mm. We are poisoned with a tolerance for perversion.
Wow.
That is what has happened to us. That's why we have to reclaim the word perversion, because we are tolerating not God's plan as we speak.
Right.
And by doing that, we have to say this far, no further, because I will not normalize perversion.
That's very good.
And we have to get our families to understand. People say, well, what difference does it make? I'm sorry, but if you lose the family unit, you've lost society. You're going to lose the common good of what we have. We will go back to being tribes.
That's right.
And we will lose the city, the whole idea of a society.
That's right.
This far, no further.
Wow.
So do you see why that makes, when you start talking about those sort of aspects.
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
It's critical that we do that.
Yeah, no, it's pretty profound to think about. It really is. Let's talk for a bit about some real-world examples of laws that have been proposed this year for the state of Colorado by our elected state legislators. And let's remember they are our elected state legislators. They're not our kings or our so on and so forth. Some proposed that certain individuals whose birth certificates reflected their male gender or vice versa should be able to go to their county clerk and get a replacement birth certificate indicating a different gender as though it was the original. In your view, should citizens, assuming their gender is clearly identifiable at birth and whatnot, should they be able to obtain a government-issued birth certificate indicating a gender other than their gender that was witnessed and observed at birth?
Right. I believe the word you want to work with right now is honesty.
Okay.
It is dishonest to try to change the terms of biology.
Okay.
Now, if you want to interpret who and what you're feeling like, that's yours. But biology is not up for opinion.
Yeah.
It's just not up for an opinion. This doesn't make you better.
Right.
It only creates more problems for a child. You're going in the wrong direction.
And the only proper response to me about that is a response, of, a healthy response of anger by our community that we would experiment on children. We're experimenting on children. This is not right.
No, it's not right. It's truly wrong because they're vulnerable people. Persons that are counting on their future to be guarded by us. We're allowing their future to be jeopardized.
Yes.
That's wrong.
That's wrong. Ugh, man. Okay, so shifting gears a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another law, again, proposed this year. Mm-hmm. And the bill said that it should be legal for an adult, in this case it was a psychotherapist, to have a private conversations with the parent's child as young as 12 years old without the parent's permission or even knowledge that the conversation with a psychotherapist had taken place. What are your thoughts on this idea?
Parents have rights. Parents have rights. These aren't privileges that a society granted to parents. These are rights that a government has an obligation to preserve that parents have.
That's good.
Parents have a right to be the first teachers to their children in all things. Public school, religion, sexuality, they are the first teachers to their children. The government has to preserve their right to be the one that guides their decisions, especially in mental or physical health.
Right.
Paramount. It's not optional. And for them to say, well, we can create that law, they've confused the idea of where rights come from. Because you don't create rights. God gives them to us.
Oh.
You're denying our God-given rights of parents. And that's where my job is to remind parents, don't let them take this away from you. It's kind of it's an oblique story, but it's worth telling.
Oh, please.
Because I was listening to a book on tape, and I think it was by C.S. Lewis, but there's a story about them, you know, they're a family is traveling by train, and the grandfather's with the little six-year-old girl, mom and dad are with the other children in another car. So the little six-year-old takes her opportunity to talk grandpa some questions she can ask without mother and father nearby.
Okay.
And she says, Grandpa, how come nobody will answer my questions about sex? Okay, so you think, oh boy. Well, the answer he gives is priceless. Priceless. And it applies to what we're talking about. He said, well, sweetheart, you want to know something. And, you know, you want knowledge, and not all knowledge is equal. Some knowledge is heavier than other knowledge. And the information you're asking for is heavy knowledge.
Wow.
It's too heavy for you to carry right now. And I'll tell you, look at the bags I'm carrying as we're going on the train. Would it be cruel for me to make you carry one of the heavy bags? You can't even pick it up. I said, that would be wrong for me to do that to you. So when people don't answer your question, they're really being kind to you. They're actually protecting you because it's unfair to ask a child to carry a weight that's too heavy for them to carry.
That's
now,
great.
Is that not a beautiful
answer?
Well, that
is great.
Well, let's look at this with what you just talked about.
Right.
Children are minors. They do not have the capacity to handle heavy knowledge yet. And if you want a psychologist to tell you the difference of a child's mind to an adult's mind, there are plenty of people out there to defend this one.
Okay.
They don't have the capacity to know the gravity of choices and their consequences.
Right.
That takes growth of a human mind. Certainly, a teenager doesn't have all of those. That's why you count a parent to help make those heavy decisions for them. And if they want to make a decision after they're 18, well, then they can do that. But before that, they are not little adults. They're children. They're vulnerable.
And if we're going to say that they're ready, then why don't we let them drive cars, automobiles?
Because they don't have the capacity to do that.
But that's not equality.
They're different than us. And you have to understand, we have obligations and responsibilities for them, and especially in the terms of sexuality, that's heavy. That's cruel to expect a child to handle information that's not they're not capable of carrying.
That's so good.
See, and I like that image because you as a parent might just pull that out of the hat of tricks when the time comes and you get asked an uncomfortable question, and then you have to explain in a very loving way, sweetheart, I'm giving you an answer that doesn't hurt you.
It's really good. Yeah. It's really good. And it's so scary to think that, to your point, that we're going to give, we being those who want to head our policy in this direction, 12-year-olds or whatever the age is, they're minors, to make decisions independent of their parents, who they're going to listen to, and so on and so forth. If they're going to have a hormone therapy or their identity is different, we're going to let them make those decisions when they're not even prepared to deal with the ramifications.
I'm afraid that us looking too closely at this, we're losing the ability to look at this 30,000-foot level. Because the 30,000-foot level is very clear. Socialists think that children belong to them and not their parents. This is a page right out of the socialist page book, playbook, because they believe that the children from society are theirs to manage, not their parents. And so they're going to manage the children for you by passing laws that then usurp parents' rights. That's baloney.
It's baloney.
That's already the secular view, socialist view, whatever you want to call it, that's the non-Christian view entering into and confronting us with our Christian culture. They're the non-Christian culture that's being forced upon us. And parental rights is the flashpoint for that, particularly children. Anybody in their right mind with a religious background will tell you parents have a right to make these decisions for children. And then once they become an adult, if they want to reverse their parents' decisions, you go right ahead. But you do not stand in the way of a mother or father with their children. The law of nature will do that. You go over there and try to say, oh, I'll do better for that bear cub. That mother will disagree with you.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
She'll rip your arms off. Well, the mother bear protecting your children. It's part of the plan of how God creates mothers and children and fathers and their family.
Right.
It's all part of the system that God has made as part of this universal truth.
Yeah.
These people that don't believe in truth, well, they don't care about that. They want their propaganda fantasy system of how they want the world to work because they're so sure it's going to work right, even though socialism has failed everywhere that it's applied.
Yes, so true. And that word baloney you used, that's a very Catholic theological term, right?
Yeah.
Nobody priest can use that word, right?
That's right. Well, baloney. I like it because it sounds like I'm going to say another word, but it comes out baloney. Because they think, oh, Father, you can't. Oh, that's okay.
Oh, my. So I'd like to ask you a question about marriage.
Yes.
That ties to our previous discussion about gender.
You bet.
Okay. Simply put, is marriage like gender viewed by most within the Catholic community as something given by the Creator, or is it generally viewed as a cultural construct brought about by humanity over the generations? I know we probably touched on this a little bit, but maybe you could just
by all means
comment there.
We believe in our faith system, and this is really very interesting as in Christianity, because we believe that with Adam and Eve, many things changed because of sin entering the world. Okay. And of course, from my tradition and many others, we know it as original sin. But original sin did not affect everything. There is part of the original blessing of Adam and Eve, and marriage is part of that. That is part of the original blessing that was not forfeited by original sin or washed away with the flood. And that ability to cooperate with God to bring new life into the world is still part.
Cooperate with God.
Yeah, it is still part of what we call it's procreation. We are working with God to create. It is truly a blessing because children are a gift, not a right. Gift.
Yes, not a burden.
No.
There's burdens to carry in parenting, no doubt.
That's right. But people say, well, I'm going to then manipulate my body to then produce children because I can't. You don't have a right to children. It's a privilege God gives us to share in His work. And it's part of a blessing that God... So it's not inherent in us. It's something God gave us to share in with Him. Wow. He's given us our own rights inherent to us. That one is a privilege that God allows us to share with Him.
That's great.
So you see how that starting point matters for Christianity? Because Adam and Eve were married.
That's right.
He gave the fruit to his spouse, his wife. Mm. Well, you don't call somebody your wife if you're not married to them.
Exactly. Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
So it's this whole context of what is marriage in our society, it's between a man and a woman exclusively, is how we know it in the 21st century. Were there other times and eras? Yes. Mm. But we're not in those times and eras. The time and era we're in is this one.
Yeah,
and it's one man and one woman. And there's actually a very interesting idea. Remember we talked about that equality issue?
Yes.
An equal?
Yes, sir.
Well, there's a very important concept that comes in here because it's part of how God created us. It's not that complicated, but the word is complementarity.
Okay.
Complementarity. A complement in art is you have red and green. Somebody will say, oh, that red is so complementary with the orange. No, it's not. That's an analogous color. The complement color to red is green. The opposite. Mm. Well, husband and wife, in some sense, are opposite to each other.
Yeah.
And we believe that as I teach the sacrament of marriage to people, I know it as two and three. There are two loves, procreative love and unitive love. And that's part of our belief that you will have unitive love all your life, and your unitive love will last longer than your procreative love.
Yeah.
And every time you forgive your spouse, you practice unitive love.
Mm.
Okay? Yeah. And then there's faithful, permanent, and fruitful. Exclusive, lifelong, and you have control and mastery over your passions. That's called fruitfulness.
Okay?
The reason I brought it up is that a couple, when they cooperate with God and they now have entered into this relationship as opposites, we believe that one called faithfulness. If you're really working on being faithful to your spouse exclusively, all of your differences will come in sharp focus. And all those married people out there who really work on faithfulness, they know exactly what I just said.
Wow.
You will see how different you are. And you'll need to say you're sorry because you're going to keep bumping up against the differences. But why does that matter? Well, remember I talked with those two very important loves? There's actually a very important one that's produced. It's called unconditional love.
Mm.
There are no conditions to your love for your spouse. Mm. Her differences don't matter. You love her in spite of them because of them.
Mm.
And you love absolutely unconditionally.
Wow.
Why do you need that? Because your children would come along, and sometimes your children don't quite come out the way you expect them to. Or they act like you want them to. Or they have character defects that drive you crazy. But you know what? You love them in spite of their differences because of their differences.
Mm.
And then you image God's love for us, because then you image marriage upon the cross. Not even death could stop God from loving us. That's unconditional love that Jesus is practicing on the cross, that then husband and wives are asked to practice because of their differences from each other. That's why it's important that it be a man and a woman in union to create this privilege of being able to participate with God in procreation, and they are faithful, permanent, and fruitful in doing it. And with it, they have this unitive love that lasts throughout their relationship. That's
so
the way I know how to describe it.
Thank
that's the
that.
Dream
no,
that
wonderful.
I call it. That's
it's
the
really
goodness. That's a good stuff of what it is that we need to be talking about, because those values need to be reflected in the laws and the policies that we have in our world today.
Yes.
And it's the exact opposite. All the disorder is what's being put into laws.
Mm.
Well, if you focus on all the disorder, what are you going to get? Disorder.
That's right.
You're going to unravel and unhinge the Christian value system that we have in place.
Wow.
And that's what we're watching systematically being unraveled as we speak. It's frightening.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Concerning the pillar of religious liberty, kind of shifting gears a
little bit. You bet.
There was a bill proposed last year in the legislature to prohibit some members of the religious community from providing certain counseling services.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, if an individual under 18 years of age who struggled with unwanted same-gender attraction, parents approving of the counseling, if they came to you,
mm-hmm.
this bill would prohibit you from providing your counsel if the counsel involved words or actions that supported their desire to reduce same-gender attraction. And this ban would have been in place regardless of whether your counsel simply conveyed the conveyance of the traditional Catholic teaching as it relates to same-gender attraction. Please give us your thoughts on that proposal.
Well, again, this is just totally dishonest. I mean, this is just a dishonest proposal.
Okay.
You are forcing a propaganda view of how you want to manage the people of your world.
Hmm.
That is not the role of government. It is usurping the parental rights of parents. It is harmful to the citizenry, because here you have minors, children, who don't have the capacity, and now you're prohibiting them from getting the help and guidance from their parents.
Mm.
This is abhorrent.
Right.
I mean, I just find it abhorrent. And not only that, it's keeping me from practicing my religion, which is a right in our country.
Freedom of religion, right?
I mean, it is one of the first rights. That's why the first right is the freedom of speech, so that you can speak your religious beliefs openly. This is an outright affront. That's why I came out so harsh about it. This is an affront to everything we believe in Christianity and the United States of America. This is bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bizarre.
Right.
That is throwing the Constitution out the window by trying to do something like that.
Agreed. Seems the cultural winds are blowing strongly.
Yes.
Perfect lead and right against those who believe in the pillar principles. Is there a point in your view at which we may realize law and culture have just gone too far and we should basically accept that?
Boy, I believe there, as I wrote in my pastor's letter this week, that, you know, I believe that that Jesus is a prophet, because he is a prophet. And the readings that we encountered this last Sunday was a parallel to the Beatitudes. But in Luke's gospel, there are four blessings and four woes. It's that fourth blessing. Blessed are you when they hate you and exclude you and insult you and call your name evil because of the Son of Man. Be glad and rejoice, because reward in heaven is great. And I can tell you this much. There are people who hate us and hate Jesus' teaching on love and marriage in our world today. They hate us for telling this story.
So true.
And I can tell you this much. We know that we cannot hate them back. We must love them. We must pray for them. But I will not compromise. I will not call perversion normal.
Mm.
We must say this far and no further.
Mm.
This is not tolerable. And I said to people, it is better to suffer than to compromise. If we have to suffer the consequence of standing up for Jesus Christ, well, then so be it.
Mm.
But that is where we must not compromise, because you lose the sanctity of marriage and of the family. You've lost society.
Wow.
You've lost it. Now, I know this is going to sound amazing to you, Aaron. Maybe you were taught this way. I don't know.
Sure.
But when you talk to a young person, I know I was just talking to a young man, good young man. He was so proud. He's 18 years old now. So I was explaining to him, you know, now that you're an adult, there's all these things. You're not a minor anymore. And then I told him about how our society is falling apart. And I said, you know what? It's looking a lot like the Roman Empire. He looked at me curiously. Do you know that there are people in our society that have openly rewritten history? If you go to Wikipedia, and go ahead and look what the fall of Roman Empire is, it's not what I was taught when I was a young man. I mean, I'm 61 years old. 35, 40 years ago, you know what they taught? The fall of Rome happened because of moral decadence. That was the only reason that was given.
Okay.
Moral decadence. And when you drill down deeper, we realize the family construct, again, these people aren't even Christian, but they lost their ability to stay family units, because of them with same-sex attraction, they lost the family unit, mm-hmm. Rome fell apart.
Wow.
That's what was taught in public school classrooms 40 years ago to everybody.
Okay.
You do not find that definition today. I said that to him. He looked at me in shock.
Wow.
I said that 10 years ago in a high school classroom with children that were of my own religion. And that one boy said, "You mean you're homophobic. You're saying homophobia is what caused the fall of the Roman Empire?" And I said, "No, I wouldn't call it that, but I'd say sexual immorality is what caused the fall of the Roman Empire."
Right.
But do you see how we've unraveled our Christian culture? We've unraveled the definition of any moral judgment in history that has to do with any sexual morality. We've unraveled it. We've dismantled it. And we've allowed perversion to enter like poison. And we're being poisoned as we speak.
Yes.
People don't realize how they've been poisoned with this perversion. Mm. And I think we need to get back to our terms, because we need to go back to the dream. We need to reassess what is healthy, what is not healthy. Remember, children are minors. They can't carry the weight of human sexuality like an adult can. We need to reclassify and recategorize how we allow government to interfere with our lives and let them help us live our lives,
yes.
Not to tell us how to live.
I love so much, Father Andrew, how you're sharing with our viewers that to stand for these pillar principles for families and number of children is going to require a willingness to suffer for them.
Yes.
I keep hearing that thread coming through.
Yes.
And I just think it's so important for us to sort of absorb that we're definitely in a culture where if we're not willing to stand up for what we believe,
yes.
And face the discrimination, face the lack of job promotion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever the context is, we're never going to be successful. And you shared this story about, you know, someone saying, "Oh, you know, you believe, you know, you're a homophobe," or whatever. You're willing to be labeled and called a name and not freak out about it and say, "Oh, no, now someone's, you know, speaking mean." My encouragement for folks is to remember, we're going to have to be willing to be called names.
I know.
And if we're not willing to stand up for God's principles and these foundational principles because someone's going to think ill of us,
that's right.
Shame on us.
I know.
So,
and
thank you for
the
reminders.
And it is important to people to remember that Jesus told us that it wasn't going to be easy. He just assured us that it would be worth it.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
So when he warned us, "I warn you, blessed are you, but they're going to hate you, exclude you and insult you and utter every kind of evil against you." Well, don't cave in.
That's right. It's okay. It's
stand your ground. This far, no further.
That's right.
And love them. Pray for them. But that does not mean we compromise what we believe.
Yes.
And I would hope that in time, from their own personal experience, God will reveal that that path does not bring happiness.
Yes.
It doesn't bring fulfillment.
Wow.
And when they watch the Christians, after their confrontation, go away with joy, happy, joyous, and free, in their hearts they say, "I want what they have."
Right.
Well, because we're living something authentic. You can get money, and it can make you buy pleasure, and pleasure will make you happy for a time. But you can't buy joy.
Mm.
And you have to remember, joy is actually a gift of the Holy Spirit that God gives us. Mm. And when we experience joy, we're celebrating the gift that God has given to us, and it's the goodness of being human by living by certain standards. And then only God gives that when you live a certain way.
Mm.
Well, if they want joy, they're going to follow what we say and what we do.
Yeah.
And that's why bad examples are hard for us, because they will always use them against us.
Yeah.
That, again, cannot stop us from going forward.
Right.
You know, we cannot lose our ground because of our past. And I can say as a Catholic, this is crushing for me to watch the current... I've been called for a vocation to be a priest in a climate in which the last 40 years have been, or 30 years have been, all these complaints about the clergy's bad behavior and working with minors.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't stopped me. I'm happy, joyous, and free, because I know I love being a priest. and I'm going to keep cooperating with God in the salvation of souls. Mm. And I want to help other people experience the joy of being a Christian. of what it's like to follow our Lord and Savior so that they, as a family, will see your friends and family in heaven with you for an eternity.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's important for people to know. It's not here. Our reward's in the next world. This is just a way station to get us to that blessedness that awaits us.
There you go. Yeah.
We recognize many in the Pillar Citizen community, they're alarmed to learn that some of their fellow citizens who've been elected to represent them in the Colorado legislature are working to actively undermine the Pillar principles.
Yes.
Principles that reflect the intrinsic and irreplaceable value of families and unborn children. What, in your view, should be the response of the Pillar Citizen community to these developments?
Communication, honest communication at the grassroots level is how this happens. People need to talk. If something bothers you, say something. Don't assume that everybody else is on board with it. If you see something, say something. Now, it's kind of interesting, you know, our Catholic Church has taken a lot of criticism for, you know, minors being abused. But I will tell you this much. We have gone through a very proactive, safe environment system for 17 years here in Denver. 17 years.
Okay.
So, I mean, it has many layers to it, and I just gave you one. When we see a behavior or an action that doesn't look right, you're supposed to say it out loud. Just say it out loud. Does that look weird, the way he's reacting with that boy or that? Whatever. Just say it out loud to see if other people hear you. And then others will say, you know, I thought that was strange, too.
Okay.
And then it's not under this veil of secrecy or veil of unspokenness, because not speaking gives tacit approval.
Mm.
And so not speaking to our legislature is tacit approval that their disordered behavior is acceptable. Speak out, talk to your friends, call them, send them an email. I disagree with you on this issue. And if we learn how to communicate openly, especially at that level, that'll have an impact. But I know a little bit about statistics, and I don't think anything changed in 35 years. When I was taking a constitutional law class, I had this one professor. He was very liberal. He had his big long hair when short hair was supposed to be in, but he was a professor with long hair. And he was always on TV. They always interview him whenever. And it was kind of neat. He was my professor. Okay. And he said that the population in general, less than 5% are politically active. Less than 5%. That's doing something other than voting. It's something other than voting, you have 5%.
Okay.
That's putting a bumper sticker on your car, wearing a button,
putting a sign in your yard,
signing a petition, writing a legislator, making a phone call, 5%.
Wow.
So there's no wonder that people are so disconnected from the political realm. Most people have no idea what you're talking about when you bring that up. Because you're close to it, they have no idea. That's why it's important for somebody like myself, from the pulpit and other spaces, to talk about what's happening in the world around them and what are their rights, and to talk about it openly.
Yeah.
That's why you coordinating religious leaders, we are a clarion voice that is far more respectable. And I'll tell you, as the media keeps tripping over themselves with mistake after mistake, we become more believable than them. Because they're unbelievable now.
Right.
Unbelievable. I just don't trust them.
Yes.
I don't trust them. I don't believe them. And it doesn't mean people aren't going to watch them. I think they're entertaining. You know? So now we watch news as entertainment, but it's not. We don't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but we watch fantasies and comedies all the time. We watch fiction as entertainment. It's just now fiction as entertainment.
Yes.
And they're fooled into believing that they're journalists. No, you're just actors acting like journalists.
Wow.
It's not, we're the ones conveying the truth of news to people, because we have a clarion voice that's unlike anybody.
Mm.
And I know this much, socialists hate us. That's why they kill those in religion, because we can speak out the truth.
Yes.
We're educated, we're articulate, and people come to us every week.
Right.
They don't
Your
have...
Your competition. Basically.
We're definitely competition. We're competition to their propaganda.
Yes.
Because we speak the truth.
That's right.
So speak out is what I would say to people. Don't hold it in. If something looks weird about what you're seeing, Just say it out loud so others can hear you and let the conversation begin from there.
Wow. And you're tying that to seeing what goes on in the so-called political world.
So that's right. I just tell you, when I go to a restaurant and whatever and people want to talk and play, I talk with my full voice and I don't care who hears me. I don't. And I'm hoping they're over here. I hope they're listening in, frankly. I really do. I want people to hear that Catholic priest talking about the crazy legislature and things like that. So they know that I am speaking something very true, because I know they're listening.
We need it. We need it. Father Andrew, thank you so much for sharing some of your insights with us.
You're welcome.
The conversation. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to do it. Okay.
I'm Aaron Robertson with the Patriot League, and I'd like to remind you, you can visit our websites, thepatriotleague.org, to get connected with us. And we're also on Facebook as well. And you may also wish to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can get notified of our future videos as well. And our next spotlight will be coming up soon, so stay tuned for that. And on behalf of our entire leadership team, we want to thank you for watching The Spotlight.